Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. I have Stacy Kaysen on the line, and we're announcing her as an upcoming author in one of our upcoming books, which we'll go further into in a moment. And Stacy is the CEO and founder of Planetary. So Stacy, first off, I'd just like to say welcome to the show and congrats on being selected for the new book.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Stacy. So excited to talk more about Planetary and what you're doing in the marketplace and also your background as an entrepreneur. I know that you're definitely well seasoned there, and we'll get into that as well. But we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So Stacy, we at Mission Matters amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Stacy, what mission matters to you?
Finding natural wellness products for people, finding a way to help people be their healthiest and kind of reach their optimum.
I love bringing mission-based entrepreneurs and executives on the line to share, you know, why they do what they do, how they do it, and, you know, what we can all learn from that so we can all benefit and grow together. So thank you for coming on the show. And again, I'm excited to have you on. So let's just dive right in. Let's get into your background. Like, how did this whole entrepreneurial journey begin for you?
I grew up in the country, in a very rural area of Louisiana, and most of the people in my family are entrepreneurs, so we kind of had that spirit ingrained early on, and maybe a little ADD helps out, just kind of looking for something different and whatever's next and new. My undergrad was in nursing, and I knew I wasn't going to be an RN in the ICU forever, but it was a really great place to kind of start the career, and it has morphed quite a bit since then. So I think constantly looking for the next new thing has kept me going.
So going from obviously the traditional, let's just say RN background to like, how did that leap or that jump to entrepreneurship? How did that happen for you?
Well, I was good at science in high school. So I went to college majoring in something science related and started as nursing and did intend to go to medical school. And I was working at a teaching hospital. So it was fun to see all the residents and, you know, kind of be involved in that, the invigorating learning atmosphere. But life changed a little bit. I ended up marrying a military officer and moving. So I did a master's in anesthesiology and worked as an anesthesiology nurse practitioner, or CRNA, for 12 years. After that.
And so what was that first business or that first thing that when you, and you may have had multiple along the way, but what was that first thing where you were just like, all right, this is where I know entrepreneurship's for me. And I'll tell you what I mean. So when I remember, and I'll just share a little bit about myself. So I'm probably, I don't know, 20 businesses in, right? If we count from being a kid and, you know, whatever those kid businesses were, right? And at some point in time, I just finally had this thought that, you know, I have to go out there. I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And like that's probably going to be my lifestyle going forward. What was that point for you? Like, what was that business or that idea or that thing where you're like, okay, this is where I need to be?
The first business technically was an anesthesia business. And it's not exactly like starting a whole new idea or anything crazy new, like we did with Planetary, but it was more like, okay, you've got this degree and I'll be moving around a little bit with the military. So how can I make this work that I can kind of set my schedule and do the types of work I want, different hospitals and different settings. So the first one was like case in anesthesia. So yeah, a little more like training wheels, baby stepping into that world.
And then, so we all learn as you took a first step and then you progressed, and we'll of course get into Planetary, but you know, like all entrepreneurs, we learn from the ups, the downs, the sideways, like everything in between. And it's just the way it is. If you could go back and maybe give that, you know, that Stacy that was just kind of getting going, whether she was getting her training wheels or she was taking them off, like what kind of things would you tell her?
Don't be afraid. It's never too late to change your mind. And, you know, even if the dream seems giant and daunting, it is achievable. Just one step at a time, one breath at a time.
What kind of motivates you? Like, what gets you like excited to like, because this entrepreneurship, I tell people this all the time, and for our long-term listeners, like, it's not easy. It's not, I mean, I know a lot of people are drawn to it and it's not for everybody, but you know, there's other forms of, I like to say entrepreneurship, entrepreneurs, there's, you know, being a value where you're at, there's a lot of different ways to do it. So it doesn't mean everybody has to be entrepreneurs, right? But like, what motivates you on those days that are kind of like, okay, this is one we got to get through?
I have had a fierce internal drive and determination from a really young age. So, and that kind of showed up academically and otherwise, and it has grown as I have, and as I've kind of grown in confidence to actually bring these things to fruition. But really my biggest drive and my passion is helping people. Mm-hmm. And that can be kind of a variety of different avenues along the way, you know, and when I was fresh out of college at 21 years old, I was an ICU nurse in a level one trauma center. So you're one-on-one saving lives, so to speak. Wow. And then through business, you realize you can help people actually quite a lot through business and through philanthropy and through mentoring and speaking. And now, you know, with Planetary, our core mission is very much centered around helping people. So that's really what drives me at my core. If I see an angle to really kind of better society or humanity, then that's where I push.
Yeah. And I mean this in all sincerity. Now, I mean, I've already learned something from you and taken something away. And that's the fact that, like, just with your previous experience. So when I'm having a tough day or something, I mean, I can say, Adam, is this a life or death situation? Because you've been in that. Like, and I mean that with all sincerity and seriousness. I know it sounds funny, but in reality, it's like you have that core, that rock where you've been in these life and death situations. Yeah. So even at the toughest moments, it's just being able to step back and say, all right, in my case, I'm asking myself the question, is this a life or death situation? Right. And if it's not, hey, then it's a blessing, right?
Right. It's a great perspective.
All right. So let's, before we get into Planetary, I want to know a little bit more about, and for all the audience, like, just first off, this is, we're just bringing Stacy on to introduce her to you and also to the upcoming book project, but we're not going to give away all of the content. We're not going to give away everything that we're going to write about, right? Because I'm going to bring Stacy back on the show, and we'll do a deep dive in a part two of this episode of this interview, and we'll do a deep dive into her writing when the book's live. But Stacy, what are some of the ideas or some of the things that you plan on proposing? I'm not holding you to this. I know we're still in editing, but some of the ideas and thoughts you have on what you'll contribute to the upcoming book.
Sure. My biggest concepts were around resiliency and flexibility. So being tough and resilient enough to get through those hard days and hard phases and to really push to your bigger calling, your higher calling, but also the flexibility, because things do not always go as planned. Mm-hmm. And I think making the changes and making the shifts is actually an asset to us. Instead of like, gosh, why did it take you so long to get to this career? Mm-hmm. I think that meandering path can be quite an asset, because those experiences learned give you enough range and breadth for problem solving and kind of wisdom and perspective, so that when you get to the hard days at whatever current business or career path, you have that perspective, like, probably no one's going to die with this decision. So, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. All right. That's enough on that one. I'm hooked. I know our audience is as well. Switching topics. And as I said, we'll bring Stacy back, so don't worry. But switching topics. So Planetary, I mean, this is another one of your businesses. Tell us about the company.
Planetary created a method for extracting from hemp using water. Yeah. So it breaks the typical, it breaks the norm. So what most people don't realize is the hemp plant doesn't make CBD, the plant makes CBDA, but through heat, chemicals processing, and some, you know, kind of older thoughts in that community, it's routinely decarboxylated into the CBD that you commonly see in the store. So we approach this very differently. Like, what if we extract, instead of using, you know, pentane, hexane, ethanol, what if we extract using water? What if we kept the whole plant extract in its raw natural form? What if there were some incredible benefits to leaving it in that form? It's actually more bioavailable in our bodies. So there's a lot of new things about the industry and new approaches that we're doing. So it's exciting and innovative, and also presents a challenge to create an entirely new category.
Yeah. And I think one of the most interesting things about this is, not just the technology, the benefits, we'll go further into that. But aside from that, the industry, we can already, when we think about CBD, we can already think about, even though it's just widely distributed, I mean, last, you know, X amount of years, right? It's already like the thoughts, the ideas, some of the processes, some of the methods, it's yeah. already feels like it's already kind of an older industry from the standpoint of, even though it's new and innovating and all these other things, there's some, you know, an old guard, so to speak, right? So like, this is the way it's done. This is the way it should be. This is the way it's supposed to be. Like, how do you break through that? I just feel like it's already, it's like, what do you mean? Like, now's the time for innovation. It's all brand new. But then it's like, I feel like there's, of course, going to always be an old guard in any industry, right?
There is an old guard. And this is where it's an interesting kind of divergence of the science and the medical community, but also the plant medicine and the more kind of spiritual and even indigenous type rooting with plant medicines as a whole. So it's like, you want to respect Mother Nature and the plant and what she can do for us, but also there's this exciting medicinal science behind it. And so it's kind of merging those two, and they can be at odds or they can complement nicely. I think what's held us back in this industry is due to lack of funding, due to government regulations and legal issues. There had been no research for however many, I guess since 1930 something. So we're just in the last, say, 10 years doing a lot of scientific research. So there's a lot coming out now. And some critics would say there's not much science on it. Right. Yeah. Because there couldn't be for 90 years.
Right.
Now we're catching up and there's a lot coming out really frequently. So, and there's still kind of the stigma, whether it's, the Delta 9 psychoactive marijuana aspects of cannabis, or even the non-psychoactive CBD side, or the decaffeinated side, as I say, there's still some stigma around it that had been deeply entrenched for 90 years of prohibition. So we're still working to overcome that a lot.
It seems to me, and just looking at, and I didn't even think about that. I mean, the governmental side. So when you think about that and implementing a new process or anything into the market, like that's in a highly restricted and regulated industry, like that's got to be kind of tough, huh?
It is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. How do you navigate all these channels? It's a lot to deal with. Obviously, in any product, it's hard enough to get a product to market. It's hard enough to make sales. It's hard enough to grow a team, all these things. That's the normal. But now you have to deal with maybe a way innovating and creating new process, creating something new. You have to deal with the governmental side of things, and you have to deal with the education side of things. Like, how do you manage all these channels? That's a lot.
Yeah. And you're right. There's enough in the startup business in and of itself. And then when you add these layers of other challenges. So what we do is legal. It's legal in all 50 states. We can sell online to all 50. That's a common question, right? Is this legal everywhere? You're in Colorado, right? It's not just because Colorado. This is legal everywhere. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about the way we would market, I would love to tell you how this product is a natural anti-inflammatory and acts via these pathways and it will, help with your pain. And yet the FDA, because they haven't put any kind of regulations or guidelines, there's restrictions around what we can say in marketing and advertising. And that ties our hands a little bit. It's like, I want to tell people how amazing this is, and I'm not supposed to use these words or say these things. So that becomes like a marketing challenge. There were early financial challenges with banking that's fortunately opened up, at least in my case. And, fundraising can be a challenge on this side. So there's layers of complexity into kind of each department of business. And then on the science side, like it's, research is starting to come out. Research is expensive. A big part is done with government funding, which now they do fund, and we have applied for an NIH grant. Yeah. So we'll see. But those are things that are long-term plays, right? It takes a while for that to all come out. So we're still working through three pieces of that as well. So a lot of it for our growth is anecdotal. So customers, patients will report these things helping them, and, and they, you know, spread with word of mouth. So that's probably the most authentic, although it's a slow way to grow.
Let's go further into the product. So maybe go a little, you tell us a little bit, maybe go a step further and tell us about the actual product.
Sure. So because of the way we extract, it's a whole plant extract. So it's full spectrum. That's a term that's used a bit in this industry to say it's not just one molecule, like CBD is one molecule. And our most prevalent molecule is CBDA, the acidic precursor to, but there's also all the other components made by the hemp plant. So there's, you know, these are whole plant kind of extracts, and we label and kind of dose it towards the active ingredient, which is CBDA in milligrams. So our process is certified organic. The hemp we use is certified organic, and most of our end products are. So we currently have 14 SKUs. There's ingestibles. We have like soft gels and the and MCT oil and the water soluble drink additive. We also have quite a few topicals, which are nice for people. And some people that are afraid to take much ingestibles, they feel, okay, it's kind of harmless if I rub this on a sore shoulder, for example, and you'll feel the effects more locally. And then we have one canine product for dogs. So it's kind of the current offering. And we've got a few new things in the pipeline that'll be coming out later this year.
Can you talk a little bit more about just the market overall, like just the market and some of the things that attracted you to this? Because not just as an innovator, but like a possibility, like tell us a little bit more about what you see.
Sure. When I started in 2018, it was before the Farm Bill had passed and before it had really opened up everywhere. So there was at that point really an opportunity, and I and it was a little more, well, in theory, it was more lucrative at the time. And so a lot of people went into it for the money, which I think not many of us, not many are actually making money. So so then it opened up with the Farm Bill, and it became really the Wild West and a relatively low barrier to entry. So what's currently in the marketplace is, even after COVID and a big attrition from 2020, there are still over 3,000 CBD companies.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very, very crowded. And most of them don't actually touch the plant or do any processing. They create a label and they buy a product from a broker, from a commodity dealer, and put a pretty label on a product that had already been existing. It's also really common. I think currently 70% of our hemp is coming from overseas, mostly China.
Okay.
Which is down from what it used to be. So that's good. We're getting a little bit more on our American farmers. But yeah, so not really much differentiators between most of those 3,000. We are, as far as I know still, the only organic CBDA manufacturer.
Wow.
Using water.
Hold on, so that's a big deal. I mean, that's a big differentiator, first off.
Yeah, there are a few companies that sell CBDA, but they're extracting with, they're still extracting with ethanol. And even though there's not a heat step, the ethanol itself will cause a decarb, so it's unstable. So it may be CBDA, but only for a few months and then it's changed. So yeah, so we're the ones with the stable CBDA, and there's a lot of great, you know, studies out there and a lot of anecdotal evidence on how it's helping patients. So just trying to spread the word.
So what do you see as kind of the future of this market from your vantage point? I mean, because you've been in this a long time. I mean, 2018 for this particular market, that's a long time, right? Yeah. For the industry. So now you've, you know, kind of seen where it started. You see it kind of in its slightly, I don't know if I'm accurate in saying slightly maturing stage, or if it's if we're still at the start.
I think we're slightly maturing. Yeah. I'm an optimist. So that's what I like to think anyway.
What do you see going forward? Like, what do you see? Where do you see the opportunity in this?
Yeah. So I think we're all kind of waiting on government regulations or kind of the rules to, it's very gray right now. Yeah. It's like, it's legal, but also it's completely unregulated. So if you go in your gas station and you buy a bottle of CBD oil, you don't really know what's in it. And yeah. you don't even know if they know what's in it. You don't know
that
where
it scares me, by the way.
Yeah. I think what is starting to happen more and more, we put like a QR code on every product. And so it takes you to our website where we have all the certificates. And so we've traced it. Like, this is when the plant was in the ground. Wow. This is the certificate of analysis from when it was grown as a plant, when we extracted to the raw material, and then the products made. Mm. Which, if you think about, like, I don't know, an apple that you buy at the grocery store, you don't know if it's really organic.
I was just going to say, that's a better process than what we have in our
grocery It is. Store. So it's like, we're kind of in Colorado, they have implemented a little bit of regulations around it. So there's like some mandatory testing for products in Colorado.
Yeah.
There's still, it's not nationwide. So this is not what you'll see everywhere, but we had been testing since our beginning. But now that's starting to catch on a little bit more. And I think as the consumers become more aware, then consumers will demand that, you know, for your own protection. If you're giving, you know, if you're taking this, you want to know that it is what it says it is. So I think that's becoming a little bit more common, which is good. And once we get some guidance from the federal government around, you know, how this should be done, then I think it will open up a little more broadly. So currently the major retailers, big box chains, generally don't do any of the ingestibles. They'll just do some of the topicals. So like those are viewed as safer. But I'd like to get to a point where there is consumer confidence, where you are assured of the quality of the manufacturer, of the brand you're buying, and you know that it's not only safe, but efficacious for you.
Tell me a little bit more about the just kind of like the go-to-market strategy on this, because obviously you have the challenge on the marketing side. Right? Like, I get that. Like, based off of what you told me, like you can't make claims. You can't, a lot of the feedback that you get, you can't always necessarily use in your marketing, right? So tell me a little bit more about just the go-to-market strategy in general.
That has been the biggest challenge, honestly. So in the beginning, when I started the company, it was about the extraction method. And our original intent was to be business to business of this raw material. And then quickly discovered that wasn't selling so much, frankly. Because it was something new and different. People were used to a CBD commodity, and it was becoming a race to the bottom on pricing, and they were not really either aware of or valued the differentiators for stable CBDA. So in early 2020, we made a decision to do these in formulations, these retail products, which was a big pivot for the company. And in the beginning, I said, I do not want to build a brand. That just seems really hard. I'll just invent a new extraction method, because that's not as hard. But when we did this pivot to create products, it was the best decision we did. And that is definitely our biggest areas of growth and our biggest sales. But it also brought a ton of new challenges. And so we launched our retail line early May of 2020, so right in the heat of the pandemic. But it has been growing, and we've had incredible reviews and returning customers. So that end of it has been great. And then we've had to take a little bit more kind of strategic look at exactly how are we marketing, and what's our message, and which is our kind of customer segment to cross the chasm. So we have probably spent the most time, effort, and money in the last 2 years on marketing.
Yeah, no, what a great story. And it's just like, just maintaining that, you know, that pivot, like that had to happen, which sometimes we all as entrepreneurs go through. We're like, okay, it's going to end up being this, but wait a minute, the market's buying this, so I better do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunate or unfortunate, many entrepreneurs at that pivot moment where they may have had a great idea, a great thing to contribute, that's where it's time for them to maybe fold it up. And that's a part of like that perseverance, that tenacity, that like keep it going and to listen to the market, not being hard-headed, instead of trying to, and that's my word, I'm not using it on you or anybody else, but I'm telling myself, Adam, don't be hard-headed. Pivot, you have to change with the market. Don't fight it. Going back to my financial advisor days, like, hey, the trend, that's the trend. You're not going to change the world in a day. Just like you realize pretty quickly that you're not going to change the entire CBD, you know, commodities industry based off of a new process per se, not overnight, at least, right? Not overnight. It's not not going to happen over time. I'm sure, you know, it'll keep on making its inroads, and who knows, maybe the other solutions there too. But you're like, hey, got to build a brand. Like, that's where it at. I got to take this direct to market. I have to deal with, you know, what that's going to look like. So just what a story. It's exciting. Yeah.
Thank you. It's still evolving.
Yeah. And what's, yeah, so I see, and I guess that brings me to my next question for you, Stacey. So what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for Planetary? Obviously, we're launching a book together, so I'm excited there. I know what's next there, and my audience is going to keep hearing about that one. But what's next for you and Planetary?
We're starting a fundraising round. We're ready to scale. We've already done the proof of concept, and we've been making products, you know, vertically integrated within this realm, but we're ready to 5X that capacity and reach more people. So I'm doing a fundraising round, which will be spent partly on, you know, equipment and people to scale, but also marketing for customer acquisition. Yeah. So that's kind of what's going right now. Marketing, like I said, had gotten quite the emphasis. So now we have a new chief marketing officer. That's amazing. And we're really focusing on the marketing efforts that work. And doing more of kind of the advertising that is working. We have plenty of roadblocks in that arena. Like, I can't do Facebook ads, for example, and Google ads and some of the more traditional things. So we're becoming very creative with how we reach new customers. So that's the focus. And every time you grow, it's important to make sure that your team is ready for this stress test. And that the products are, and that you keep emphasizing the values and mission and kind of hold firm in the foundation as you grow and reach more people.
Yeah. What a great story. Yeah, I get it. And in terms of just investors and things like that, I know, you know, every founder, every co-founder has their different views on this. Like, what are the types of investors or organizations do you feel typically make a good fit, or would you be maybe open to hearing from in terms of looking at the Planetary opportunity? What are the right types of investors that are a good fit?
Yeah, sure. I'm not just looking for money. I'd rather, you know, don't want to be transactional. I would rather have someone who's heart-centered, who's mission-focused, who's in alignment with what we're doing. And, you know, it's nice if they have connections or partnerships to open the door for us, business-wise, customer-wise. That's not mandatory, but just someone that believes in what we're doing and is aligned with the mission that is.
Yeah, it's great. Well, Stacey, excellent having you on the show. I can't wait to bring you back on and to learn and to dig further into this. And next time, dig into the writing and the book as it's released. That being said, if somebody wants to follow up and connect, whether they want to learn about Planetary, the actual product, or whether maybe the investor side of things, somebody sees this and they're like, you know, they've been looking to get maybe into their inroad into the CBD space. I mean, what's the best way for people to follow up?
Planetary.com. So Planetarie. You can read lots of information, and there's a contact form. You can find me on LinkedIn, or you could email stacy@planetary.com.
Fantastic. And we'll put all that information in the show notes so that our audience can just click on it and head right on over and check you out. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or engaging with our platform, we're all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, experts, having them share, you know, why they do what they do, how they do it, what we can all learn and gain from that so we can all get better together. I mean, that's the heart of the platform. If that kind type of content sounds interesting or engaging or fun to you, we welcome you. Hit that subscribe button because we have many more mission-based individuals just like Stacey coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. Stacey, it's been so much fun working with you today. I can't wait till the next time we get to do this again.
Thank you, Adam.